Please join me in opening the meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problems and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And we're going to hear from Lindsay for the next 10 minutes.
I'm Lindsay. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Lindsay.
I'm super nervous to be here. I've never spoken in front of this many people. I've been thinking all day about what I'm going to say, and I'm probably not going to say anything that I've thought of, but I'm super nervous, so that's my disclaimer. My sobriety date is November 19, 2013, so tomorrow I will have 17 months. Thank you. It's the longest I've ever been sober. It's not my first sobriety date, but it's the one that means something to me. So I was born in Walnut Creek. I grew up there. I'm an only child, and I grew up in, like, a perfect, my parents were really loving and supportive, and I had everything I wanted. I was super spoiled, and I had, like, a really good childhood. When I was 15, I decided I wasn't going to go to school, and I was going to start smoking weed and drinking, and that's the first time I got drunk when I was 15. My life was basically on a downward spiral ever since that point. I didn't finish high school. I started doing harder drugs. And I don't remember most of my, from when I was like 15 to when I was 21. I ended up moving up to Humboldt, which is not the place to get sober at all. I had no intention of getting sober, but I didn't know how much of an addict I was at that point. I was drinking daily, and I had a prescription for Vicodin, so I thought it was okay. I was drinking is legal. I'm 21, and, you know, I have a prescription. I was actually dating a CHP officer. I quit smoking weed and I moved to Humboldt County. My life, like, looked really good. I went to paramedic school, and, like, I had everything figured out, except I was, like, this closet drug user. That escalated into doing heroin, which eventually ended with me getting fired on the ambulance, and I ended up in jail. And to be, like, this, like, you know, good kid from a good family in a good area to being in jail facing 15 felony charges, it was shocking. It was horrible. I got sober in jail. I couldn't, like, deal with what I had done, and I had no coping mechanisms. I'd never gone to AA. I've never really heard of AA. I was never offered rehab. Like, I don't know, I blame my parents for everything, even though it wasn't their fault at all. I ended up getting out of jail 4 months later, and I was sent to a program. And, like, that's where I was really introduced to AA. I found, like, my people. I found who I fit in with. I enjoyed it. It was an amazing rehab. Like, it was on the river. There was a sweat lodge. We, like, had all this Native American culture in it. But it was like, this retreat that, like, that's what I wanted. And, but it didn't keep me sober. Like, I never realized that my behavior and, like, my entitlement and my I threw temper tantrums over everything, and I never realized that that was the problem. I thought that if I could just stay away from drugs and alcohol, that I'd be fixed and I could go back to my normal life. And that wasn't the case. I relapsed right after I got out of rehab. And it was the worst time because before when I was using it, I never knew like what it was like to be sober and what it was like to have morals. And now I knew what that was like, and I couldn't get high enough or drunk enough to get away from like that feeling that I was doing something wrong. So I called my dad, and I just said, I need help. Like, I don't know what to do. I need help. He said, come to the Bay Area. So I got drugs. I got alcohol. I got in my car. I skipped out on probation, and I came to the Bay Area. And the next day, I ended up at Newbridge. I thought I was going to a 30-day program. I was in treatment for 8.5 months. I live in their sober housing now. But when I was there, I learned how to be an adult, how to take responsibility, how to deal with, like, life on life's terms without using and without blaming everyone around me for everything that's going wrong in my life. I'm not perfect at all. I blame people all the time. I throw temper tantrums all the time still, but at least now I recognize it, and I'm able to, like, do something different about it. Right now, before the meeting, I talked to my dad, and he told me he's proposing to his girlfriend tonight, and he asked me how I felt about it, and I love her. Like, I am super happy for him, and he right now just texted me and said she said yes, and that's, like, so cool that I get to be a part of that, and I get to be supportive and not just talk shit on her or try to, you know, see her as a threat that she's going to take my dad away or his money away. And it's just really nice to be able to, like, be a part of my family, to, like, be the daughter that my parents wanted me to be, that, like, I never thought that I'd be able to do that, to just call my parents and have a conversation with them, not asking them for anything. Right now, I don't know, these past couple of weeks have been really hard for me. I think my, like, initial, oh, I'm sober, everything's great, this is so great, has, like, my pink cloud has finally worn off, and, like, life is kind of real. I've recently, like, really started to hate my shitty job, and it's really hard to find gratitude for that job that got me out of rehab, that, like, got me where I am today. And, like, every day I try really hard. But, like, I work in Berkeley and I make minimum wage, and it's really frustrating. But, like, I'm not drinking over it. I'm not using over it. And it's hard to, like, humble myself to be grateful for all the little things that I have in my life. That I have a roof over my head. That I have my driver's license. That's a fucking miracle. I have a lot of wreckage from my past. And once in a while, I'll start to go through it. You know, I have 4 felonies. I'm on probation in a different county. I have a student loan. I never went to school. it's $10,000, and I didn't fucking go to school. I bought drugs with that money, and now I have to pay it back. And today, they took my tax return. And, like, it's okay, though. It's okay because it's money that I owe, and now I can pay it back, and now I can make amends, and now I can stop making that wreckage that I've done my whole life. I pay my bills sometimes, but I make an effort. I got a parking ticket. I tried to pay it that same day. I'm not trying to run away from things that I owe. I'm trying to get an attorney and figure out how to get off probation and get my felonies expunged so I can go back to paramedic school. So right now my life is a million times better than it was. I don't have all the material things that I had before, but I have, like, the relationships of friends and family that are way more important. I have, like, a whole group of people here tonight, and, you know, they don't want anything from me, and that's crazy. Like, they're just friends. So, yeah, things are good. Life is super real, and but I feel like I'm getting back everything and more that, like, I've dreamed of. And I know if I just continue to stay sober, continue to do the right thing, that, like, I will get what I've, like, dreamed of in one way or another. So that's all. Thank you.
All right, so now Dave is going to take as much or as little of the next
35 minutes, I guess.
About
55. Okay. Hi, my name's Dave. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Dave.
That was really great, Lindsay. Enjoyed your story. I want to start with a little disclaimer, too. I was a little bit nervous at the idea of being given so much time to talk tonight. It's the first time that I've had this amount of time, and also that I've been recorded. And so I hope I do good. But, you know, when I tell my story, I usually like to try to nowadays talk more about my recovery than the drunkalogue, and there's plenty of that. And it's tempting with this much time to kind of go through the blow by blow. And there was a lot of colorful stories about driving cars into lakes and shooting guns in my apartment and just, you know, throwing up in the aisles of airplanes and stuff like that. See me after the meeting. I can fill you in. But I really do like to talk about what's happened in these rooms because it's been a real miracle. I showed up at a meeting on a Saturday night a little over 12 years ago, and I've been clean and sober since then, and I've really gotten my life back. I think, you know, I really want to do a good job telling my story because hopefully I'll be able to carry the message and help other people. Actually, the funny thing is that when I got here, I didn't think that I had a problem with alcohol. I thought that I knew I had a problem with drugs, with another drug, and I didn't even recognize that I had a problem drinking. My drug of choice was marijuana, and I smoked pot, like, you know, about 15 times a day. And I don't want to talk a lot about some other drug, but it's a big part of my story. The thing is that the whole time that I was smoking from, like, age 15 and drinking up until 42, when I stopped, the alcohol was always there. And being in AA, I learned to recognize that was a big part of my problem. And my pattern of drinking wasn't the same as a lot of other people's. But, you know, I've learned that, you know, we all have different patterns, and it's not necessarily how much you drink or when you drink or what you drink, but, you know, what happens to you when you do. And but anyway, going back to that first meeting, my plan was to just come in here, use this program to get stop using pot compulsively, and I was going to keep drinking and, you know, go through the steps as fast as I could and get out of here. And fortunately, I got a sponsor at my first meeting, and he told me that he didn't think that was going to work for me. And I think he was right, because and what he said is that, you know, alcohol may not be your drug of choice, but if you drink, you're going to go back to your drug of choice. And I think that had happened in the past when I tried to stop using other drugs, because the alcohol was always there. But, you know, I remember the first time that I had a drink. I was about 4 or 5 years old, and my dad let me have a sip off of his beer. And I remember the taste of it. I think that's kind of weird. And it tasted really good to me. I didn't drink very much. I didn't drink as a little kid. It's not like my dad was always giving me something to drink. But I think by the time I was about 12 or 13, he figured that, you know, it was time to start letting me drink. And I would get sips of wine and stuff like that. he thought that was normal, and I just got a taste for it. And then I remember one night when I was setting the table for dinner, Dave put a bottle of wine on the table, and I went out there and put the bottle of wine on the table. It wasn't for me, but I drank the whole bottle of wine while I was setting the table. And I had this just incredible craving when I had a glass of wine, and I just had to have another and another and another, and the bottle was gone in 5 minutes, and they didn't know about it until, you know, about 10 minutes later. You know, when I was 15, I started, drinking on weekends and smoking pot with my buddies, and, I got arrested and thrown in a drunk tank when I was 19, and I also went to college but didn't go to class very much, and I was over here at UC Berkeley, which at the time was a great place to buy drugs and to goof off, and I kind of blew it. I was just a total wreck by the time I left there. I was pretty fortunate growing up. My family was pretty comfortable. My dad was successful in business. And at the end of my college time, he gave me an opportunity to go into business with him. And we started a business, and I worked in that business for many years. I think the bad part about that is that it gave me a chance to really kind of, I probably would have gotten fired from a job if I was working for somebody else a lot sooner. I did end up getting fired from the company that I basically pushed out of the company that I started with my dad when I was 42, and that was my bottom, and it was pretty bad. But it's weird. I'm telling this story like totally out of sequence. I was saying I grew up in a family that from the outside looked pretty good. We lived in a nice area. We went on nice vacations, had nice things. Parents had it together pretty much. But it's kind of like everybody in the family kind of like didn't get along with each other. Nobody got along with their parents. My parents hated their parents, and there was some alcoholism and drug abuse in the family history, and it just was like totally dysfunctional. And I grew up in that kind of a situation, and I grew up with a lot of fear, and I was growing up as a gay kid and not understanding that and not wanting to accept that. And it put a lot of pressure on me. And I'm not saying that those circumstances are why I became an alcoholic and a drug addict. What I've learned from this program is that you don't need those kind of circumstances. People could have just the perfect, everything could be great, and you could still wind up as a drunk. So I'm just telling that so you know a little bit more about me. But anyway, my strategy from a young age was to basically the big problems in life, like how am I going to get along in life? How am I going to manage to not get married and not have a family, traditional family and that kind of stuff? How am I going to make it through this life? I don't know. I'm just going to kind of kick that one down the road, and in the meantime, try to blot out my feelings and drugs and alcohol really helped me do that. And it started out as a fun thing and a social thing in high school and in the beginning part of college, but it wasn't very long before it was just a total nightmare. So this brings me back to the end of college. I had gone through a diversion program to get out of, felony possession of controlled substances. And I moved back to the East Coast and started this business with my dad. It was really interesting because it was hard for me to get weed back there. And my I mean, this was 1983, so I don't know what it's like now, but I lived there all through the 80s, and my drinking really picked up while I was there. I lived in Boston. It's a really good drinking town. I don't know what that's supposed to mean, but it was kind of like one of the things that I've learned since I've been in recovery is this concept of cross-addiction, where you take, you know, if you don't have some drug, you'll find some other drug or some other kind of compulsive behavior to fill that up. And actually, it's something that I have to be careful of now that I'm sober, because there's other kinds of behaviors that can fill up, that can also become compulsive, you know, like playing computer games or things like that. So, anyway, I lived in Boston for those years. I did try to stop smoking pot while I was there for about 8 or 9 months. And but I was drinking the whole time, and eventually I was drunk one night and I started smoking again, and so that just took me right back. I moved back to California when I was 30, and basically from age 30 to 42, things just really got bad. I was getting all of the pot that I wanted. I was not using other drugs really very much. I had experimented with other things when I was at Cal, and you know, a bunch of different things, but it was basically pot and alcohol and nitrous oxide. Those were the things that took me into my adult years. And isn't that crazy? And yeah, I started getting really crazy. I would start getting road ragey. My kind of road rage would be like ramming people with my car and having them get out and break the window of my car with their fist. That happened actually twice. And one time, well, anyway, how much time do I have to fill? Don't do that in a traffic jam is all I can say. I did escape driving through a park. But, oh, God, I'm lucky to be alive. I was just really getting crazy. I just really irritable and, physically sick a lot. Missed a lot of work. Go to the doctor a lot with bronchitis and stuff like that, which had a lot to do with the smoking, but, you know, I was just, like, super reactive, I think that's the word. If, you know, somebody would just, the slightest thing, I would get really pissed off really easily and maybe act out in a public place or in my apartment, scream at the TV set. Anyway, when I was 40 years old, I thought, you know, God, I'm getting really cranky. I must be because I'm getting to be old. And it was nuts. I had no idea what was going on with me. I did know that I was addicted to marijuana. I knew that when I was 20 years old. And which is weird because they say that it's not addictive, but for some people it is, just like for some people alcohol is addictive and for some people it's not. I had this idea that I would never be able to change that, that, you know, it was like I had been infected with some incurable disease and that I basically would never be able to get out from under that. And so I thought my situation was pretty hopeless. I didn't have very many friends. I basically hung out with my brother and, two or three other old friends. And we would get together once in a while and, you know, maybe like once a week and get drunk and take drugs. And, my social life wasn't really very great. By the time I was in my 30s, I was starting to get my dating life. By then I had accepted being gay and I started dating and dating guys, which I dated women before that, but I started at least making some progress in that area. And I think the thing that was really important for me, the kind of a turning point, was I started dating a guy who was in AA. And that's what they call a 12th step. I didn't understand this at first. When I first got here and they were talking about 12 steps, I thought that meant that, like, I grabbed my brother when he was falling down drunk and told him, you need to get to AA or something like that. And I guess that's one kind of a 12th step, but I don't think that that's the kind that really works. I think the kind of 12th step that I got when I started dating this guy was just the example and seeing what it was like. I mean, he told me on the second date that he was in AA. And actually, he said he was an alcoholic, and my first reaction was, oh, shit, I don't need problems like this. And then he said, but, you know, I've been sober for 16 years, and I go to AA all the time, and this is a lot of information. I'm thinking, he's been sober, and he's still going to AA after 16 years? That does not compute. I don't get it. But I was also thinking, I can't really tell him what's going on with me. I mean, I had this thing when I was dating that if we were sort of like, oh, what do you like to do? I'd say, well, I like to smoke pot. You know, if they said, oh, that's cool, well, it was like, great, I checked that box off and nope, you know, I'm clear. Well, I knew I couldn't do that. So I did say, well, I smoke pot. And he said, how often? And I said, weekly. And you know, that was sort of true because I would smoke for weeks on end. And then maybe I'd stop for a week when I had to get some work done. I mean, my career all during this period was just really, you know, not as good as it could have been. I mean, my sponsor says, you know, I need to give myself credit because, you know, I did great considering that I had, like, a bag on my head and one arm tied behind my back and my feet in cement kind of thing. I mean, I was pretty impaired, and I still managed to get by for a long time. But anyway, this is kind of coming to the end of my drinking career, and I was dating this guy. And things were going great. We actually fell in love. And just, I mean, fast forward, we ended up, you know, like living happily ever after together and getting married. And we're still together. So that's pretty cool. And some of you know my husband, who's not here tonight. But anyway, I got pushed out of this company that I started with my dad. And boy, that's pretty embarrassing. I mean, when you get kicked out of your own thing like that. And, you know, I had just screwed up one time too many, missed one too many deadlines. And you know, I think my dad knew what was going on with me, sort of, you know. And I knew the next thing that I was going to lose was this really important relationship. This was the first time that I'd ever had this kind of a quality romantic relationship with somebody, and I knew that I wasn't going to be able to hide this my addiction from Jeff for much longer. And so he came over on a Saturday night, March 8th, 2003, and he came in, you know, my front door, and he said, "How are you doing?" And I said, "I have to talk to you. I have a substance abuse problem." That was the only way I could say it. I didn't know what to say. I definitely wasn't going to say I have a drinking problem. I didn't think I had a drinking problem. I didn't want to call myself a drug addict. I just said I have a substance abuse problem. And I thought, you know, he might just say, "You lied to me. I never want to see you again," or something like that. But I thought he would probably help me get some help. And I was finally ready to get some help. And so we went to a meeting. An hour later, I was in my first AA meeting. And what a different kind of an experience that was. It was a room, it was the Millennium Group in North Berkeley. They have moved since then. I don't know if anybody knows that meeting, but it was just a kind of like a bright room like this. There was a table at the front with two guys sitting at it, and I'm sitting back there, and I see this table, and I think, okay, that must be like the local president or something, and is this vice president or what? I mean, I figured, I didn't know anything about AA or alcoholism or anything, anyway, so we, I raised my hand as a newcomer, and everybody said, "Hi, Dave." I did not see that coming. I mean, that was really, and it felt so good. I really felt like I belonged here. I felt welcomed, and I felt safe and supported and really optimistic. Then I saw the chart on the wall. that one. And I thought, okay, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. Wow, I've done that one already. I'm here, right? I mean, because in my mind, it didn't matter that it said alcohol. I was just substituting my drug for where it said alcohol, because I was just going to use this for my drug. And okay, so I did the first step already. Awesome. Second one, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Well, I don't really understand that, but that sounds okay. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Oh, shit. Like, I didn't believe in God. In fact, I was pretty much of like a militant atheist thinking kind of guy at that time. I just, if somebody told me they were spiritual, it was like the worst thing somebody could say. And I thought, I was really sad because I thought, I really need this and I don't see how this can work for me if this was about God. I had no idea what this was about. I didn't know anything about AA. I had a cousin who was in AA, but he didn't really talk about it much. Anyway, I just figured, well, I'm going to just sit here and who knows, maybe I'll figure out how to make this work. And one of the miracles at that meeting was that the speaker at that meeting talked about his story, and he was an atheist when he came to AA. He was a heroin addict. He didn't think that he had a problem with alcohol. He didn't think he was an alcoholic for the first 2 years that he was in AA. He liked the Grateful Dead, like me. And, you know, so I like really identified with this guy. And after the meeting, I approached him and asked him if he would be my sponsor. Now, I was with my boyfriend, and I did have some support and encouragement to get a sponsor at my first meeting. I think it's a lot of people, I think most people probably don't get a sponsor at their first meeting. But that was so important for me. Just in general, in my recovery, my sponsor has been a huge part of it. And I don't think it would have been possible for me. And I honestly, I don't see how anybody can do this without a sponsor or somebody else to work with. And when I hear people talk about doing the steps by themselves, I don't know what to say. I don't like to give a lot of advice unless somebody asks for it. But I couldn't do this without a lot of help. And my sponsor has given me a lot of help. So... So anyway, we Jeff and I went up to this guy and introduced ourselves, and he's like, "Are you guys together?" And we're like, "Yeah, well, kind of, yeah." And but I'm this is my first meeting, and so we talked, and he agreed to be my temporary sponsor, and he bought me a big book, and I said, "I can pay for that." And he said, "No, I want to do this. You can buy one for somebody else someday, but I'll give you this book." And so I took the book, and we made arrangements to meet and start working together, and that's what we did. And I was so just desperate at the beginning. It really helped me just to have no other options. And I did think that this could work. And by the end of that first meeting, by the time I had heard my sponsor tell his story, I understood that a higher power didn't have to be the God from the Bible. It could be a lot of things. And I decided that my higher power would be the group, the wisdom in the rooms. And that's what I started with. Now, it's changed since then. But I told my sponsor, Bill, about my problems with God, and he gave me that book, and he said, read the chapter, We Agnostics, and there's also an appendix at the end on the spirituality or whatever it's called, and read those. And when I read We Agnostics, that was really helpful for me because I realized that I did believe in a kind of higher power. It was just, you know, kind of hard to describe. And, you know, today the higher power that makes sense to me is just, it's not me. It's, you know, it's the things that are beyond my control. And I call it God. It's not the kind of God that was described in the Bible to me, but it works for me. And I really depend on that relationship. I mean, since I've put some time together, my life has gotten so much better. You know, I've been able to have this long-term relationship, been able to repair my career. I've calmed down a lot and don't get angry so easily. It still happens occasionally, but I'd say about 95% of the anger has gone away. I don't want to be too, you know, but I've it's cool when you go to meetings and you know, somebody who saw you in the very beginning and then a year later, they'll say, Dave, you've really changed. You scared me when you first got here. And people have said that to me, at least one I can think of, and probably more than one. But, so it's been really fantastic. I mean, there was the pink cloud. You know, when I go to meetings and I like to share in meetings and I like to carry the message and sound positive and everything. But I think it's also really important to be real and to not to try to gloss it over and make it sound all rah-rah and like everything is great. And I mean, it's, you know, life, it doesn't, we get sober, but it does, this program doesn't take away all of our problems. And I can tell you honestly, I've been physically sober for 12 years, but how am I emotionally? How is my peace of mind or my serenity or my emotional sobriety? Well, that varies. It depends. It varies from day to day or from week to week, and I think it depends on how I've been working my program. I just to kind of check in with what it's been like this week. This has been a challenging week. I don't know, about 10 days ago, I tripped on a box in my basement and I cracked my knee. I don't think it's cracked, but I bruised my kneecap really bad and wrenched my shoulder. So I've been sort of like limping around and feeling in pain. And then I found out on Wednesday that one of my closest friends, one of my closest childhood friends, lost a long battle with cancer. And I went to his funeral this morning and had to, I didn't have to, but I wanted to go and see all of his family that's grieving. And I didn't really want to do that. But I mean, I wanted to do it, but it was hard to do. There's no way I could have done that if I was still drinking. I wouldn't have been able to be present for them. But it felt very weird. I also found out yesterday from my dad that my aunt, who has been struggling with cancer, has now decided that she doesn't like the treatment that they're suggesting, and she's threatening to kill herself. And her, you know, her mother, my grandmother, killed herself. And my aunt's son, who was the guy who was in this program, and he went out and he relapsed and killed himself. So there's some other suicides in the family. And so when somebody like that starts talking about suicide, you know, it sends shockwaves through the family. And I was trying to decide if I really wanted to get into this, and when I'm standing up here and telling my story, and I think it's important because how it affected me this week was like, I was just really kind of feeling weird and crappy and angry at my aunt. I when people start talking about suicide, I it pisses me off. And my friend, I felt very sad about the loss of my friend, and you know, stresses for business. Anyway, a whole bunch of stuff. I think, but the point is that what do I do about that? I think about the tools that this program has given me. I think about my higher power. I need to understand that I can't and I shouldn't try to manage all of these things. I really want to, I have this want to try to fix all of these things. And of course I can't. I've been praying. I've been thinking about my higher power, and it's given me a lot of comfort. It hasn't like made everything all great, but what's the alternative? If I didn't look at it this way, what am I going to do? Like go out and buy a quarter of weed and smoke it and drink a case of beer? You know, or it would be more than that. But so this is a lot better. And I am so grateful to this program. I also have a few minutes left. I just want to say that my relationship with my sponsor has been really important, and I don't take it for granted. There was a time, I guess I was about 4 or 5 years sober, and we were talking about something that was a little bit uncomfortable for me, and I just didn't call him back right away, and I thought I'll call him next week, and then it got to be 2 weeks, and then it got to be 3 weeks, and then it got to be like 2 years. And I lost my relationship with my sponsor, and it was not good for me. I mean, I stayed sober. I talked to other people in the rooms who were sort of my, you know, secret temporary sponsor, but I didn't really have a sponsor, and so I've had that experience. Eventually, I got the willingness to call him up, and we had some discussions, and finally he agreed to start working with me again. You know, we've gone all through the steps twice now, and we talk to each other pretty often, I really, really value that relationship a lot, but I don't take it for granted. And when I talk in front of a group like this, one of the things I like to really hit on is how important sponsorship has been to me. And I just encourage other people to do that. Also, you know, having people who are willing to work with me and let me be their sponsor, it has helped my sobriety a lot. I think that it's helped some of those people too. I know it's mutually, you know, helpful. And so I just think sponsorship is really great, and it's part of this whole thing about that we don't have to do this alone. We work together. This is based on something that was invented back in the 1930s. It's proven. It does work if we do what's suggested. And you know, if we work at it, if I work at it. So, wow, I filled up the time. I've just got a couple of minutes. I don't know. I just really appreciate the chance to speak in front of a group like this. I hope you got something out of this. And if you thought that this was great, I think this is going to be on a website. You can tell everybody you know, Dave. No. Now I'm just filling up the time with crappy jokes. But anyway, I think I'm going to end it with that. So thanks so much. This is a great room. I think I'm going to come back and come to this meeting more often. Thank you.
Now we're going to do announcements, and at this meeting we like to do meeting-related announcements first, and then we'll do any general AA announcements after that. So, meeting announcements starting over here.